What the hell was that?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah. Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this kook. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
With Rod Babers and Patrick Davis.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
Is there a problem back there?
HornFM.com and on the Horn app. The Horn, where Austin talks sports.
Welcome back to another edition of the Rodcast. It is a Tuesday edition of the Rodcast. Great show planned for you. We do have the names of the attendees of SEC Media Days for the Longhorns be coming up. That'll be coming up next week, July 15th through the 18th. Because we'll be talking a lot about Texas and SEC Media Days. But we'll talk about the attendees that have been announced for the Longhorns. We'll also get into Quinn Ewers. EA Sports college football video game ratings. Those have also been leaked to the public. So we'll discuss that as well coming up on the show. CeeDee Lamb had something to say, had an announcement via social media about his contract status. We'll dive into that coming up later on the show. Also, there's a discussion happening about the U.S. Men's National team, the basketball team, and who's going to be on the starting lineup, in that starting lineup for the upcoming Olympics. We'll discuss it and talk about it. We have some sound from Anthony Edwards, who's discussing his role with the upcoming Olympic team. So we'll get into that. Only doing it the only way that he can, because he's one of those guys who's got very charismatic personality, and he lets you know exactly how he feels. So we'll get into that audio too coming up next hour. Also, Daniel Jeremiah, he is doing his way too early scouting evaluations for the 2025 draft, and he's on Quinn Ewers at the moment. So we'll give you some of the details and nuggets from his scouting evaluation. It's up at NFL.com. So we'll dive into that coming up a little bit later on in the show. There are also some SEC trends I want to identify. Will the Aggies potentially be one of the better passing attack, potentially the best passing attack that Texas will face this upcoming season? We'll dive into that. We'll talk about it coming up a little bit later on the show. We'll go behind the burnt orange curtain. We got Rod's rant of the day. We got your usual favorites. Who said that? We got off the record coming up a little bit later on the show. We also have what the facts, what the stats coming up. And we also have your topic for the big fat poll of the day. We are loaded as always. So let's not waste any time. Before we dive into it, let's introduce you to the rest of the crew, because he's one of the hardest working members of the ARN family. He's got a hustler spirit, period. Not sure what he's paid, but I'm pretty damn sure this man is underpaid. Ain't no 401k for this hustler, and he's a hustle man of many talents. It's our friend, co-host, and neighbor. It's Patrick Davis, y'all. What's going on, Patrick? How you doing, brother?
Doing good. Rolling in on a Tuesday morning, ready to kick things off. It is, I'm glad we're not at Big 12 Media Days. I heard it is 120 degrees is the high in Las Vegas.
Ooh. Yeah, that's tough. It's Vegas, though.
It is
Vegas. You can deal with it in Vegas. Because there's always some casino to walk in and out of, so you're all right.
Yeah, but the time that I've been to Big 12 Media Days, there's not a ton of downtime in the day. And then we have to wake up at early to do the show. There's not a ton of time to go enjoy Vegas, I don't think.
There is. I mean, it's over at like 3 or 4 o'clock. What are you doing for the rest of the day?
Don't
enjoy it. Trust me, a lot of people, after like 4 or 5 o'clock, they will go gamble and they will party until the morning hits. Oh, yeah. So you're just a rational, sensible human being who cares about your work and what you do the next day. So you want to get some rest. You go in your hotel room and watch TV no more. Some people will go just gamble and party at the tables. I'm not kind of those people. I don't like to gamble that much. But I know people that do in Vegas. Oh yes,
we'll be able to see some of the questions, some raspy voice out there, and
yeah. Oh man, it's Vegas. It's Vegas. It's, some people have been kind of waiting on this trip too, because they, some of the media members, they don't get a chance to get away. Vegas for how long is it? Big 12 Media Days? 2 days?
Is it 2 days?
It may be 3 days now because so many teams. With so many teams.
Yeah,
I mean it. Right, they got they may be three, because I know SEC is three, right? 15, 16, I think it's actually maybe.
I think 15, it's 18, four actually. For Big 12, right?
Yeah, it's four
for SEC.
Yeah, so you might be, it's probably three actually. We don't keep up with the Big 12 that much, but Trust me, man, it's going to be a lot of partying for those folks at Big 12 Media Days. I'm good, happy for them, because I can only handle Vegas for about 2 days, and I'm done with it anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, you get Deion Sanders and Las Vegas. It'll be a fun time out there.
That's going to be fun. Yeah, I forgot about that. Forgot about Deion. What is Deion going to do at Big 12 Media Days? His first. He definitely got something planned, right? He's going to come out with like a band or something. It's going to be like something real like grandiose. I guarantee you. He's going to be the way he dresses or something. Deion's got something planned.
Yeah.
There's no way Deion's just going to come in there low key.
And if Brett Yormark is smart, we're going to see him somehow try and put Gundy and Sanders together to start that off.
Ooh,
we got to start that rivalry.
Yes. Oh, you couldn't get more best, especially going into an election season. That's the rivalry you want, right? that going into election season, that is the perfect rivalry for you right now. You're right. You dial that one up, Brett Yormark, and try somehow to see if you can get Deion or Shadur to want to perform. And Big 12 Media, because they both have rap albums.
Something tells me Deion's not going to perform, but Shadur
might.
Yeah, he might. Yeah. I don't know who's asking for that, but he might.
Nobody's asking for it. But Brett Yormark, I'm telling you, he might push it out there. Just throwing it out there as a suggestion.
Let me tell you who performs for you every morning. My co-host, he's a proud alumni of DBU. He's got more papers than Dunder Mifflin and watches more film than Siskel and Ebert. He is a new Rod, father of Austin Sports Radio, Mr. Rod Babers.
I thank you for the intro, brother. I appreciate that. Yeah, Big 12 Media Days. That is going to be pretty wild, though, in Vegas. I mean, I don't even know. I'm sure maybe Mountain West or something has done it, but none of the major conferences have done that before. And Brett Yarmark's going to have a lot of, like I said, he's going to have a lot. It's going to be an extravaganza for him. So it's going to be, and do we know what hotel it's in? Do we even know that?
It's at Allegiant Stadium.
Oh, okay. Yeah, with a
Because they've been doing they've been doing it at AT&T Stadium in Dallas, in Arlington, is where they had been doing it.
Nice. Okay.
And so, yeah, now it is at Allegiant Stadium, so you go down
which
there.
Which is actually away from the Strip. So I wonder where the hotel is, where they're staying and everything. I wonder where they're actually – where the media, the Big 12 media there, I wonder where they're actually supposed to stay. I'll find that. I'll care. It'll be easy.
I don't like
that.
So it's 2 days, but they don't even have –
Oh, sorry, 2 days.
Oklahoma State and Colorado on different days.
So
come
not,
on, your
see?
Mark.
Hey, that's – you know what, Patrick? Yes, I haven't – nobody has thrown that idea out there, but – honestly, it's a brilliant one. Why not start to already manufacture some rivalries, at least some it rivalries for the time being, and that would be a great one. That would be good. I got to look at the schedule. I don't even know if they play. I don't even know if they play.
They do play. I know they play, and they play near the end of the season. I know we looked that up. That's good.
That's good, man. Because Gundy will take a shot at Deion if you give him enough softballs, he'll take it. He might even do it inadvertently. Like he might not even be trying to do it, and he'll still do it because they're just so different. They're just so right. Just their styles and the way they carry themselves. I'm with you, Patrick. That'd be a great rivalry to start in the Big 12 because both of them would talk a lot of trash to each other. You can get both of those guys to kind of hold court with the media. All right. Speaking of the media, we will discuss the Longhorns and their SEC Media Day attendees. Those have been announced. We'll also dive into Quinn Ewers' EA Sports video game ratings overall because some of those have been leaked because they're doing some showcase because I think video game comes out maybe in like a week, maybe 10 days, something like that. So they're doing some of these social media showcases to give you some of the details about the video game. And I think they had Michigan and Texas playing in one of these previews. And so you got a chance to see Quinn Ewers and you got a chance to see some of the ratings and stuff. So we'll get into that here coming up in the first segment. We'll also go behind the burnt orange curtain next segment, discuss that Daniel Jeremiah scouting evaluation of Quinn Ewers because I think the NFL scouts, we've been pretty thorough at breaking down what the NFL scouts want to see from Quinn and the leap they want to see from him this year to solidify his place as being either the top quarterback on the board, hell, maybe being number one overall if the leap is big enough, but definitely being a guy that's drafted in the first round. So we'll get into – and Dan Jeremiah, he likes Quinn Ewers, so this is not some scathing scouting evaluation. Like he's actually a fan. So we'll get into that coming up when we go behind the burnt orange curtain. Right now, let's not waste any time. Let's get you updated, informed, and educated on all the top stories of the day with my man Patrick Davis and these Horn headlines.
All right, your Horn headline is brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. In the MLB, the Astros send Ronyal Blanco to the mound tonight, beginning their series with the Florida Marlins. The Marlins are currently on a six-game home win streak, while the Astros have ridden a hot streak to within two games of the lead of the AL West. The Astros will still have to deal with two star players, Cal Tucker and Justin Verlander, being out a little longer, as new reports indicate that both players will not be able to return until after the All-Star break. And the Rangers won their fourth straight with a 9-4 win over the Angels. John Gray weathered a three-run, two-second inning to pick up his fourth win of the season, and the Rangers came back strong with five runs in the fourth. Corey Seager and Wyatt Langford both homered in the game, with Seager extending his hit streak to 13 games. Max Scherzer gets to start tonight, with the Rangers looking to start a run for the second half of the season. And that is your Horn headlines.
All right, thank you, Patrick, for the Horn headlines. Appreciate those. All right, let's get to this SEC Media Days, or at least the attendees for Texas that have been announced. Just four persons. Of course, Steve Sarkisian representing as the head coach. Quinn Ewers going as a starting multiple-year veteran starting quarterback for Texas. Kelvin Banks will be joining them as well. And then Jahdae Barron. That's it. That's the list. Just three players: Quinn Ewers, Kelvin Banks, and Jahdae Barron. And it does—I mean, it makes sense. You know, Quinn's going to be there, multiple years starting quarterback. You know, Kelvin Banks. I mean, Kelvin Banks is projected to be, you know, a top five pick. Matt Miller, remember, he just recently had his way too early 2025 mock draft. He had Kelvin Banks as the top tackle taken off the board and going, I think, number five to Washington, I believe it was. He had Quinn Ewers going 10th overall. So both of those guys he had projected as being top 10 picks. Quinn was the second quarterback, I believe. Actually, third quarterback, because he was behind Shedeur Sanders and Carson Beck, I believe, in that mock draft. But had him still as a top 10 pick. So those guys are no-brainers. And I think Jahdae Barron's a bit of a no-brainer, too. I know there are some other guys, but think about it. Nobody's more of a proven commodity on that defense than Jahdae Barron with Texas. We know Trey Moore coming in, 13 sacks, double-digit tackles for loss, but that was with UTSA. You know, you go look at Makuba coming in, the guy who's done it at the highest levels for Clemson, but that wasn't necessarily with Texas. Ethan Burke, still ascending. Anthony Hill just established himself last year, so haven't even really started an entire season yet, but he's going to be fantastic. Malik Muhammad's a really good player, but still relatively young, hasn't started an entire season yet. I mean, you got Jahdae Barron, who's a multiple-year starter, and I think people forget how good Jahdae Barron's 2022 season was. I went back and looked at it. I mean, it really was one of the best seasons I can remember for any individual DB at Texas. And you guys know I keep up with DBU. So that 2022 season, and we'll get to 2023 because he was dealing with some injuries, so he wasn't as consistent. But he had an 82 Pro Football Focus grade, had zero touchdowns allowed, 64 passer rating allowed. He was the only FBS DB in the last 22 years to register double-digit tackles for loss, one fumble return for a touchdown, and an interception return for a touchdown in the same season. He led the Big 12 in defensive stops that season with 36, but also led Power 5 DBs in stops in pass coverage with 24. He also, if you go look, and by the way, still wasn't an all-conference selection. I don't know how the hell in 2022 he was not. That was ridiculous. Every other DB that had stops that were basically top three in stops in the conference made all-conference, and he did not. I still don't really get that. He also was great blitzing. He ranked second among Big 12 DBs in pass rush grade by Pro Football Focus. Was one of just three DBs in the conference to register multiple sacks that year. He was fifth among Big 12 DBs, allowing just 3.7 yards after the catch per reception. He led all Power 5 defensive backs in yards per catch in coverage that season, 5.6. You go look at him overall, he was the only Power 5 DB that was targeted more than 40 times in slot coverage and allowed fewer than 5 yards after the catch per reception. Also, zero touchdowns. And he led in yards per catch in pass coverage among Power 5 DBs. And my favorite stat, because I found this one individually, his 11.5 tackles for loss, because I thought that was a really high number for a defensive back, and I was right. Last time at Texas, we had a DB have that many tackles for loss in a season. You had to go back to 1978 before Rod B was even born. Ricky Churchman did it. Like, that's how rare it is, Patrick, to have a DB get that many tackles for loss. He really is. He's a true football investigator. And what I mean by that is he can decipher, gather clues pre-snap, post-snap, and have the ability to you know, solve the play, if you will. Narrow down the ways the offense is trying to exploit you based on the down, the distance, the formation, the personnel grouping, his film study. You know, narrow down all of those ways they're trying to attack you. And by the time you narrow it down to three or four plays based on your film study, hell, you might narrow it down to just one or two plays. And he's fearless. I mean, I would have the same process. I was also a football investigator, but I played with a little bit more fear in my game that, hey, what if I'm wrong? Right? What if I'm wrong, though? I mean, yeah, yes, I've just done all of this, these calculations, and I've narrowed it down to two or three plays that they can attack me with and exploit me with. But if I'm wrong and I guess wrong and I don't rely on my fundamentals and technique, oh, man, I can give up a real big player. I can look really bad out here.
Yeah.
He doesn't have that same fear. He doesn't operate like that. He's fearless. And I admire guys like that. Nathan Vasher was like, I don't know, I play with guys like that, and they end up being great players. I played with my friend because I was like, you know what, if I'm wrong, I got to make sure that, you know, I have a fail safe. So I'll play from the upfield shoulder instead of cutting underneath. Those guys are like, nope, cutting underneath. I'm taking the pick to the house. They're that confident in their game and in their football IQ and football instincts. I probably was not as confident, a little bit more insecure. But that's why he was able to, that's why those wide receiver screens and those quick game hitters and the smoke screens that he has to deal with, he can tackle them behind the line of scrimmage really quickly because there's no indecision in his game. He's not thinking about what if I'm wrong. He acts quickly. But then you translate that to 2023 and what did teams do to him toward the end of the year? Double moves, counter keys. They gave him a lot of kind of fake keys, if you will. They gave him out and ups. They gave him the stalk block and go. Remember they did that against it was TCU that did it against him. Washington did some similar things. So they give him all of these false keys and counter keys because he processes so well and so quickly. Let's use that against him. He's processing so, and he plays with no fear at all. Okay, let's use it against him. Let's give him the red meat that he wants. And then when he attacks it, that'll be a false key, or we'll have a double move, or an out and up, or a stalk block and go. And that's what they did to him last year. And I think this year he'll evolve his game. Well, he'll have a little bit of caution, just a bit, not too much, not to make him like Rod B. All right, but to just a little bit of caution, so that, or at least play with better fundamentals and technique. That way, it'll safeguard you against some of those false keys and double moves and things like that, like playing on the upfield shoulder or playing with more eye discipline, things like that. And I think he'll learn that lesson too and be a great player this year. He should be continuing to be an all-conference defender, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think too, when you talk about bringing him to SEC Media Days, you're talking about bringing the culture bearers of, we've already talked about, you know, you've lost a lot of guys that you felt were your culture bearers at Texas and Jay yep. Witt and guys like that. So if we say that you want Kelvin Banks to take that role now as a third-year starter, you want him to take the role on the offensive line of being one of the culture bearers for Texas. You know Quinn has to be as a starting quarterback. Mm-hmm. And you say on the defense, who do we have that's still here that we've lost some guys that were part of that? Now, Jahdae Barron, you came back for another season. Yeah. You're now part of that, you know, veteran leadership on the team. You know, I think Sark, who is a very big proponent of his culture, wanted to bring the culture bearers and not necessarily the guys that have not quite earned that role yet. Some of the younger guys where you could say you could bring a Manny Muhammad or a Anthony Hill or somebody like that who's an up-and-comer, but you don't say, well, in your second season, we think you're going to be one of our big culture bearers, so you're going to take those guys like Jahdae Barron, who came back for another season, give him the opportunity, and show the student athletes who do come back for another season, well, we'll go put you in the spotlight and go to SEC Media Days too if you do make that decision to come back for one more year.
Yeah. No, you're right about that. And I love what you said about, you know, Sark looking at him as one of those guys who epitomizes the culture as a culture bearer, because you go look at last year, right? I don't think he was as consistent as he was in 2022. I just gave you those stats about 2022 and how great he was. But he was still really good. Dealt with some injuries, but I think Sark admires him because there for two two examples. That Bama game, he makes the first big play in the Bama game.
Yep.
First big play. On the road, big game. We don't know how good this team is going to be. He made the first big play. And it was one of those fearless plays that I talk about. I even got the quote from him here talking about that interception he got in the Alabama game. Now, basically, there were on the drive where he gets the interception, a few plays before that, probably four plays before that, Jalen Milroe is reading Jahdae Barron on a route concept. They got three receivers to Jahdae Barron's side, and they're running number two and number three, counting from the outside in. Number two and number three run out cuts. Number one runs a nine route, just running his defensive back off to clear space. And Jalen Milroe is reading Jahdae Barron. Jahdae Barron drops back. Then he's either going to throw, if he drifts back with that nine route, right? If he drifts back, he is going to throw the underneath route, which is either that quick out to number three, or he's going to throw a shallow crosser from a receiver coming from the other side of the field. And that's exactly what he did. He was reading Jahdae. Jahdae dropped back, drifted back into coverage, and he decided to throw the underneath shallow crosser. Jahdae Barron actually talked about this in the post game. He said he was watching Jalen Milroe on that play. And he said, okay, so he's watching me, and he's going to throw the underneath route, whatever it is. It could be that shallow cross coming across field, or it could be that that number three outcut, the quick out by number three. He's going to throw it if I drift back. If I take number two and I'm really aggressive on that outcut, he is probably going to pull it, and he's going to throw it behind me. Right, he's going to take that one-on-one behind me because he's going to assume he's got man-to-man coverage. So Jahdae Barron said he baited him on that play. Said he faked like he was going to drift back into coverage, and he knew that Jalen Milroe's read was, hey, if he drifts back, throw the underneath route. So he said he drifted back, and he changed his alignment. He said he was outside leverage the first time he recognized it, and then he drifted a step and a half inside just to give himself a little bit more space. And he said, he basically had decided. Like, and I told you guys, I operated with a little bit more fear. He had already decided, I'm jumping it. When they run that route again, I'm going to jump it. But I'm going to fake like I'm drifting back. So his automatic read at that point would be, I'm throwing the underneath, either the shallow crosser or I'm throwing the outcut. And that's where Jahdae Barron got the interception. The quote he said was, yeah, I kind of baited him. Barron admitted. He said, basically, I was watching film, and he said during that week, I jotted down steel in my notebook with that particular concept. He said, watching it before the game, he said, watching their film on the week prior, he said he had already decided, oh, that's a great concept for me to jump the route and bait the quarterback. He said, yeah, I kind of baited him. And he also said, it was Terry Joseph he gave credit to. He said, we watched film throughout the whole week. I showed him what plays I wanted to make and stuff like that. But I remember vividly, we were in the hotel and he just tapped me. And he was like, let me show you something again. And he reminded me of this play. And it was a play Oklahoma State ran, and they ran it versus Jalen Gilbo. And he said, we will get this play one time. And I remember it vividly. And he said, you know, we kind of got that play. So he's talking about being a football investigator, being able to decipher these clues. This is a guy I think he's a next level guy that can play, of course, at the NFL level. But for Texas this year, they really should try to showcase his versatility, even out that other corner position where you're not sure what you're going to get with Javion Cole, not sure what you're going to get with Gavin Holmes. If you like Jalen Gilbo more than you like, you know, those other two corners, you can put Jalen Gilbo at the nickel, move Jahdae Barron out to corner. I remember even Gary Patterson saying he thinks he can play safety if need be. So, you know, that I just think we start looking at Jahdae Barron's overall game. I think it's a little bit underrated and underappreciated, but not from Sark. And by the way, remember that U of H game? He essentially wins that U of H game for you. Remember, he's hurt. He doesn't play in the first half because he's hurt. They don't anticipate him playing. I think Ryan Watts was out for that game too. And he comes in the second half and gets you a PBU on fourth down to save the game for you in the goal line stand. After missing the first half, I think he did warm ups, but missed the first half, and they thought, nah, we don't need him. You know, Texas was up by 21 points in that game. Thought they were going to win. This guy who was in, you know, street clothes, decides to put the cape on, put the uniform on, and go, all right, I got to go help my team win the game. That's why Sark loves him. That's why, because he could stay. He could have stayed out. He could have been like, nah, I'm good. I mean, I'm hurt. I don't want to go in there and hurt myself even further. And what if I go in there injured, and then I can't make the play because I'm injured? And then I make myself look even worse, drop my draft stock. So they weren't worried about any of that. And that all those were realistic possibilities.
Yep.
He'd win that game, injured. They got the game winner on him. Then that highlight goes everywhere. It's on Sports Center. Oh, man, Jadae Barrett, he got toasted out there. His draft stock drops a little bit. You know, he gets people start hating on him for that. Then his confidence drops. That could have gone all types of wrong for him. That wasn't his concern. His concern was, my team needs me, period. I'm the best option.
Yeah.
Even at 65%, I'm better than them dudes out there at 95. I need to be out there. That's some testicular fortitude. That's why he's going to SEC Media Days.
Yes.
That's why he's the dude. Yeah. So, big Jadae Barron fan, obviously, as you can hear. Kelvin Banks is just a stud, period. I mean, this dude is going to be the top tackle taken off the board. And we know that. I mean, you go look at – I'll give you a stat about Kelvin Banks. He allowed – 2.3% pressure rate on pass blocking snaps. And on true pass sets, he allowed a 3.5% pressure rate, which is fifth among Power 5 tackles. The 2.3% pressure rate allowed on pass blocking snaps, second among returning Power 5 tackles. I mean, remember his freshman year, he faced four first-round picks. I think he allowed one sack between four first-round picks. Played Will Anderson. And what was the other kid from was it Tyree Smith at
Tech?
Tech. He was another one. And Udike Uzoma.
Yeah.
From K-State was the other one.
There was one more,
and
right?
It was Will McDonald, I believe.
Yeah.
From Iowa State was another one. It was four of them. And I think he allowed one sack when he faced all those guys. And I believe he faced more if you look at guys who were drafted later. That was the guys that were drafted in the first round that season after his freshman year. So that dude's he's basically been considered a first-round pick since his freshman year. So no surprise there. And Quinn Ewers, I'll give you this. So we'll get into the Quinn Ewers scouting evaluation by Daniel Jeremiah. We go behind the burn orange curtain. But here are the ratings, what was released that we saw from Quinn Ewers on the video game. So a 92 overall rating, 92 overall, which is pretty damn good. 81 speed, a lot faster than I thought. But I remember last year, some of those scrambles, he did surprise some people with his breakaway speed. He's got a 68 sack avoidance rate, which that is not surprising to me because I always talk about him, how he handles pressure or inability to handle pressure. I think that's kind of what they're talking about, his ability to break sacks, a sack avoidance. And if you go look at overall, and they don't have his arm strength, which is weird, but throwing under pressure is 90, which is, I think, kind of handling pressure. They don't have his arm strength on there, though, but that might be on the game when you get into some details. Arm strength probably would be, he might have the strongest arm of all the quarterbacks on the game, potentially, or at least one of the strongest arms of any quarterback on the game. But he won't be the highest rated person on the game. There's no way at 92 is the highest rated player in the game. So Carson Beck probably is going to be higher, maybe. I mean, considering a lot of people have him as the top quarterback in the country, Travis Hunter is probably going to be higher than that 92 overall. It won't be a lot of players higher than 92 overall, but I do think some will be. I think he'll probably be – he'll be like maybe fourth or fifth. I just don't know how many players are going to have ranked ahead of Quinn Ewers. I also say this, that I don't know who – because they're releasing like some of these previews slowly but surely, leaking this information. Still don't know who the highest-rated defensive player is going to be. We just talked about Jadae Barron. It could be him for Texas. It could be an Anthony Hill. It could be – how they could love Trey Moore coming in after having double-digit sacks last year at UTSA. It could be him. I mean, it could be three, four guys potentially.
Yeah.
It could be your top rated player on defense. We still don't know. Still have no idea who that's going to be. All right, there you go. That is Quinn's EA Sports College Football Ratings. Speaking of Quinn Ewers, my man Daniel Jeremiah been doing a breakdown on prospects for the 2025 draft, and he's doing Quinn Ewers, or he just recently completed his Quinn Ewers evaluation. We'll dive into it, read you some of the tidbits, and talk about what Quinn Ewers has to do to turn himself into the top quarterback on the board in 2025. All of that and more right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis and Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers. Coming back on the Horn.
And they were all asking themselves the same question. What is behind that curtain?
All right, welcome back to the broadcast. Time to get into some Texas football conversation behind the burnt orange curtain here. So Daniel Jeremiah, he does scouting draft prep for NFL.com, and he's doing prospects for the 2025 draft, and he was recently evaluating Quinn Ewers. So here is some of the tidbits. I won't read the whole thing to you, but here's what he liked. He said what I like. I love Ewers' urgency and tempo in the pocket. He has very quick feet as he sets up, and he can slide laterally or climb vertically to avoid free rushers. He has a quick three-quarters release point, and the ball really pops out of his hand without much strain or effort. He throws with anticipation in the middle of the field. He loves throwing dig routes, and he can generate plenty of velocity to fit throws into tight windows. He excels on run-pass options because of his quick hands and decision-making. He threw some beautiful deep balls against Alabama last season, but there are times in other games I studied when he put a little too much air under the deep ball, allowing defenders time to recover. All right, where he needs to improve, he says, I love how quickly Ewers sees the field, but there are times where his feet can be late to marry his eyes, which impacts his accuracy. For example, he'll start a read to the right, quickly get his eyes back to the middle of the field, and deliver the ball before aligning his feet in that direction. He overcomes it occasionally, but it should be an area of focus as he embarks on the 2024 season. He also has a bad habit of unnecessarily fading away and falling off some throws. Fortunately, he possesses the arm strength to get away with it at Texas, but that will be a risky proposition at the next level where the speed drastically increases. He said his biggest takeaway is that he doesn't know why Ewers hasn't generated more early excitement and buzz. He said, I was very impressed with his skill set. His performance in Alabama last season should have answered any questions about his viability as a top NFL prospects, as a top NFL prospect. So he says, He said, I believe Ewers allows creative play designers and callers, play callers plenty to get excited about. He can make every throw from the pocket. He's accurate on the move and can take the free yards that are offered in the run game. So there you go. He likes Quinn Ewers. He said he can't watch. He can't wait to watch him play at Texas A&M because of how hostile the environment is. And let me know if this sounds familiar. This is Daniel Jeremiah of NFL.com. He says, it's tough to top Texas, Oklahoma, but I do believe this matchup will eclipse it this fall. Let's go. Yeah. Who's told you that before? I've been saying that all year. I was like, no, this season, Texas A&M will be bigger than Texas OU. Only for one season. Only for this season while they're rekindling the rivalry. So Paul Feinbaum said it'll be the biggest game in the SEC this year. So I'm not the only one. I'm just going off the feels and the vibes. All right, but getting back to Quinn Ewers, and you know, one thing he brings up here is something that Sark actually intentionally focuses on, emphasizes in quarterback evaluation, which is quick hands. He brings up the quick hands. More and more of the teams in the NFL are going to RPOs and running more RPOs, and if you're going to have an RPO-based offense, you need a quarterback that can manipulate the mesh point and a quarterback that is great pretty much with sleight of hand, which is what your RPO game is, and that can make off-platform throws from weird, strange angles, which you're going to have to do constantly when you're running RPOs, and Quinn can do that. Matter of fact, he does it masterfully. He brings up that sometimes that Quinn was a little strong on some of the deep balls, a little long on some of the deep balls. Quinn's deep ball, his deep ball issues, because he's not a natural deep ball thrower. I don't think he's naturally great at it. I do think he's improved and gotten much better at it. But there was a reignited narrative about how bad his deep ball is or was after the draft. Oh, not after the draft, but after the combine. After the combine, after A.D. Mitchell ran a great time, Xavier Worthy ran a great time, there was a lot of people that went back into the back down the rabbit hole, went back to the film to go watch and some of the analytics and metrics to go watch and track Quinn Ewers' success or lack thereof with the deep ball. And so they found all these really ugly numbers to show that he's not a great deep ball thrower, but he has improved. The ugliest number would be that Xavier Worthy had a 22.4% off target rate on throws, which was the highest in the receiver class for any receiver. His 9.2 yards per target average on deep passes was the worst of any projected non-undrafted free agent wide receiver in this 2024 class. 94 deep targets in his career on a 25% completion rate for Xavier Worthy. So we're looking at Xavier Worthy and A.D. Mitchell stats and wondering, like, hey, why aren't these guys better on deep balls and better as deep threats? And then they obviously made that connection to Quinn Ewers. But I will say this, Quinn Ewers' last seven starts, because at one point, like I say, he's not a natural deep ball thrower. The last seven starts, 20-plus yard passes, 43% completion percentage, 14.8 yards per attempt, only off target on 25% of those throws with a 92 QBR. His previous 15 starts, he had a 23 QBR on deep throws. That was 135th in the FBS. He had, out of 146 quarterbacks, he had a 24% completion percentage, 7.9 yards per attempt, 44% off-target rate. So everything has improved in terms of a deep ball in the last seven starts. So I'm actually not worried about the deep ball as much as some have overblown it. I think he's gotten better. The big issue, I think, for Quinn is going to be how he handles pressure. Dan Jeremiah didn't bring it up much there, but I think scouts want to see how he handles pressure because we're not sure. We've seen him handle it really well. We've seen him handle it poorly at times. Better in 2022, 13.9% pressure to sack rate. 2023, 25%. Allowed pressure in 2022, 14%. Allowed pressure in 2023, 22%. So I think they just want to see which Quinn is it. Is it the Quinn that is he the Quinn that handles pressure really well, or is he the Quinn that panics a little bit under pressure? And I think the panic comes from him visually, literally seeing the pressure. I think he sees it. That's why last year he scrambled a lot, because he would see the pressure, see it, bail, get the hell out of Dodge. And Sark would rather have him scramble than take the sack. But I think ultimately Sark would like Quinn to either manipulate the pocket, learn to be a better pocket scientist and buy himself more time, step up in the pocket, move around in the pocket, or he'd rather him get through his progressions quicker before the rush gets there and feel the rush, sense the rush, don't see it. Michael Penix is the best example I can give Longhorn fans who remember it. If you see it, then you're going to react to it as a quarterback. If you're seeing the rush, you're definitely not seeing your route combinations and progressions down the field. So you got to see, you got to feel it, but you don't want to see it. And I think at times Quinn actually looks at it and sees it. That's going to be, and even Tark said, I want him to get deeper into his progressions. In order to get deeper into your progressions, you got to keep your eyes down the field, and you got to be able to manipulate and create space in that pocket by moving around. And I think Quinn's definitely got that in him, but I think that's part of what scouts want to see. They also want to see him in more straight dropback situations. That's not his fault. That's Sark. Not anybody's fault, but that's just Sark's system. Sark, only 35% of his dropbacks, roughly, are going to be straight dropback situations. Everything else is play action pass, screen pass, RPO passes, and that's just the nature of Sark's offense. So there's more uncertainty about exactly how well he can adjust to just straight dropback situations, because that's the NFL and that's kind of what he's built on. But he's got all of the potential, and I think this year you'll see more of it, because I think Sark wants to show that off. because Sark understands. Sark wants him to get drafted really high. That's going to help out Sark too. So you'll see him utilize in more of those straight dropback situations, in my opinion. And ultimately, like I said, I've always said this. I've been saying it for a while. They want to see him, you know, put the cape on. They want to see him come rescue his team and be the best player on the field. And we've seen flashes of that from him. But in the SEC, in these big games, Michigan, Georgia, A&M's another big one, as Daniel Jeremiah mentioned. Of course, Texas OU is always big. You want to see him potentially engineer of a fourth quarter comeback, a game-winning drive. It'd be great if you're never in that situation and you always have the lead and Texas blows every team out. We know that's not going to happen, right? Texas will be in tight clutch situations, and they'll have one score games they have to win. Last year Texas was 3-2 in one score games. You're going to have the same situation. There'll be 5 or 6 games that'll kind of come down to that, and you'd like the difference and a great equalizer to be Quinn and his poise and his clutch gene. He's 6-5 in game-winning drive and fourth-quarter comeback opportunities, which, by the way, is definitely a respectable record. But when he gets those opportunities this year, I'd like to see him be 3-0 in those situations. That's when scouts will say he can put the cape on. If you can put the cape on, come rescue your team, be Superman, then if you got that capability, then they'll potentially draft you number one overall. Like, you could leapfrog Carson Beck. That's why Shedeur Sanders, they believe that he's got that ability, because he can take a Colorado program and, you know, basically make them overachieve or put that team on his shoulders and win big games and, you know, have that clutch gene, game-winning drives, and fourth-quarter comeback. So I think this year that'll be the separator for Quinn, on top of improving on all the things the scouts want you to see improve on. But they want to see him in those clutch situations rise to the occasion, which I think he's done a good job of. They want to see it even more. I think that's going to be the next step for him. He's six and five in game-winning drive and fourth-quarter comeback opportunity, which, by the way, like I said, if you want to compare that to NFL guys, most NFL players, quarterbacks, in that situation, they're below 500 in their win percentage. It's a tough situation for a quarterback to win even more than your fair share in game-winning drive and fourth-quarter comeback opportunities. Doesn't happen a lot. So for Quinn to even be 6-5, like I said, it's more than respectable. But they want to see him pull some Joe Burrow, Caleb Williams type stuff and show he's got that kind of mojo, that kind of je ne sais quoi, that special something, whatever, that it quality. And I think he's got it, but they want to see more of it. All right, we come back. We'll get into the topic for the big fat poll of the day on the other side. Also, we'll learn more about the musically themed day of the week. This is the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers. Coming back on the Horn.
Back here on the Rodcast on a Tuesday morning, that means it's a Top of the Charts Tuesday, where I'll play you songs that reach number one this day in history, starting it out with some of the Association songs called Windy, starting it off there on a Top of the Charts Tuesday. Text lines open, 512-447-3776. Time to get to the Big Fat Poll of the Day.
Patrick's Big Fat Poll of the Day on the Horn.
All right, Big 12 Media Days is starting today. We'll start to see the teams come out. is we start to get a little bit more college football news. It has been pretty dead in college football for a little bit. Not a lot of action, but we'll start to get those as Big 12. Then we get SEC media days next week. I have to look up when Big 10 and ACC, I don't know when they are, but I'm sure they're going to be here in the next couple of weeks. So we'll get that, and we'll start to get some more sound bites, get some more information, see what's happening in college football, and that will ramp up. But since Big 12 media days is starting off, let's ask the easy question today. Who will win the Big 12 this year? There is no Texas. There is no Oklahoma. So who will win the Big 12? We know Utah is the odds-on favorite to win it this year. K-State not far behind in the odds. Behind that, we have Oklahoma State, UCF, and Kansas all coming in. But you could say a wild card. Is Colorado, is this the year? Is this the year Colorado figures it out? Is there a team in the Big 12 that you think can all of a sudden put it together? Does Texas Tech take over and feel that they've got things going with Joey McGuire? Now, what team do you think wins the Big 12 this season?
I'm going Utah or Oklahoma State. I think it's going to be those two. Those are my two.
Yeah, I mean, Utah's really good if they can stay healthy. They didn't stay healthy at all last year. We know Cam Rising, too, playing in his 75th season. But he's he's had the injury, so he's not been able to play. But he comes back. If Cam Rising plays, he's probably the best quarterback in the Big 12. He could be really good.
Shedeur Sanders would have something to say about that.
Yeah, and so would Jaden Daniels. But, I mean, neither one of them has shown that they can play at that high of a level. Cam Rising has before his injury. So I think, you know, there could be some good quarterback play, but that's also, did Shedeur Sanders actually prove that he is the number one overall pick by having a, you know, 9-win season and getting a chance to win the Big 12? Or does he have another, you know, 6-win season, a 4-6-win season, and then maybe his stock drops a little bit? And then, yeah, when you look over Jaden Daniels with his injury history, does he come out and have a good season for Kansas this year and lift them back up to where Kansas thought they were headed before they had some injuries in the last couple years? What do you guys think on the text line? 512-447-3776. It is a pretty wide open Big 12 now that there's not, because it's always been somewhat wide open. It's always had a lot of teams that have tried to compete there in the middle. Baylor hasn't looked very good. I don't know if they're going to be able to turn it around. You have some of the teams they've added recently in Cincinnati and Houston and BYU. I don't know if those teams are really in that conversation as much. Iowa State tends to stay in the conversation. Arizona is a bit of a wild card coming in from the Pac-12, just seeing how they play against these Texas teams.
They lost so much, though. Man,
they did.
They lost a lot. Arizona lost a lot. So I just don't know if they're going to – they were really good last year, but I just don't know if they're going to be there.
Yeah, because Arizona, their head coach is now the head coach of Washington, correct?
Yeah, exactly. They lost Johnny Nansen, as we know. Yes. Man, that's a lot. They still got some good players. I mean, McMillan's really good. They got that cornerback, Takario Davis. They got some good players, but I don't see them being one of the front runners. But you're right. Big 12 could go – like six teams could probably contend. Six, seven teams could contend to win the Big 12 this year.
So let us know on the text line, what do you think? Who will win the Big 12 this year? We'll get that posted up on X as well, at the Horn ATX, and let you get some votes in on that.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see Colorado make a run at it just because I'm a fan of Deion and what he's doing. But I do think Utah and Oklahoma State, they have a lot of continuity. Oklahoma State's offensive line's underrated. I know Ollie Gordon just got in trouble, but he's considered the best running back in the country coming back. You know Mike Gundy can just coach his butt off, man. Mike Gundy's just a hell of a coach.
Yeah.
He really is. He proves that year after year in the Big 12. And Utah is always underrated. And they still win, even though they sometimes, you know, have to deal with quarterback issues and quarterback injuries because Cam Rising's been hurt multiple times. And they still find a way to win a lot of games.
And, I mean, K-State is technically your second-best odds to win it, according to DraftKings. They're at plus 380. So K-State is what they'll say is your second best shot. UCF was one that surprised me that they're up there in the rankings as well. But a lot of teams that could be into it. Well, I'm sure we'll see more stuff, and we'll see if there's any fireworks of anybody talking any trash during Big 12 media days as well. We get Mike Gundy a little bit near the end of today, and then Deion Sanders is first thing tomorrow. He's the first one to go tomorrow.
Yeah, and you're right. I can't forget about Avery Johnson, that quarterback for K-State. I mean, they expect him to have a breakout year this year.
That's true.
A Heisman sleeper is what they've been saying about him. He didn't do much against Texas last year, but he was red hot before they met up with Texas last season. All right, two things I also like about or at least why I like two teams, Utah and Oklahoma State. They actually are one of four teams in college football that bring back head coach, quarterback, multiple year starting quarterback, head coach, OC, DC, special teams coordinator, strength and conditioning coach, and a multiple year starting quarterback. And that is Utah and Oklahoma State. Ole Miss and Texas are also in that category. Those are the four programs that bring back all of that continuity at the top. Nobody else in college football is bringing back both coordinators, strength and conditioning coach, head coach, and a multiple year starting quarterback like them. Yeah. So that's why I'll take that. I'll take Utah and I'll take Oklahoma State just because of that factor alone. We'll see how far it takes me. All right. Good stuff there. We'll come back. We'll discuss more of the topic for the big fat poll of the day, who you got winning the Big 12. We'll also get into a conversation about Team USA, the men's national the basketball team. There's a conversation about who's going to be the starting five for them. I'm going to get my man Patrick's thoughts about that because there's a bit of a battle happening between the old regime and the new regime. We'll see who's going to win out here. All of that and more when we come back. This is the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis on Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers. Coming back on the Horn.